Go tell Navi, go tell Tingle, it's the Insert Credit Guide and intro jingle. This is Insert Credit Gaiden, a chance to grind out more experience points for your Insert Credit skill tree. This week, Liz Ryerson reports from the 2024 Game Developer Conference in San Francisco, California, while Brandon Sheffield and Frank Cifaldi have a discussion at the 2024 Game Developer Conference in San Francisco, California. You better get ready.
Greetings. This is Liz Ryerson, and I'm here with you today. It is 3:08 p.m. on Wednesday of GDC. I am currently walking the expo hall with my friend Ty Underwood. Say hello, Ty.
Great to be back, Liz.
Yes. So we're about to experience the full state of what the game industry has to offer in the form of giant, gaudy banners and shit, and lots of different colors and shapes. We're going to see a lot of rectangles and, you know, squares, all kinds of shapes, cubes maybe, if we're lucky.
Last year, we saw on the evil side of the expo floor the kind of waning reputation of Bitcoin and NFTs.
Yes, we're gonna track that down. We can see if we're gonna see if we can find crypto, Bitcoin, NFT stuff here. Its presence is markedly less than last year. Shocker, I know, to anybody listening.
The shit du jour this year is definitely AI, of course. And so we're going to see if we can be replaced on this very podcast.
Okay, so this is the end closest to, I think, South Hall. We have a giant Unreal Engine banner here that has a Lego Fortnite ad that is quite large. And there's a bit of a purple lighting on this, like, makeshift Unreal stage. There's a guy giving a talk about the Unreal Engine while people are sitting on these cylindrical, like, white seats. And now we're in, this is the Game History Gallery, which is at the far end, which is quite unfortunate. Anything that I'm interested in is obviously the least interesting presentation.
The floor is covered in what appears to be popcorn and candy wrappers. And this somewhat dinky and off-to-the-side display is what we're going to take a look at.
Yeah, I wonder if Unreal destroyed game history with popcorn. It's just a metaphor for everything. Tim Sweeney doesn't want people to know about ZZT.
And Tim Sweeney, as usual, is nowhere to be found.
Yeah, unfortunate. Unfortunate. Here's info from past game developers conferences. There's a guide to E3 with a black furred Donkey Kong from Donkey Kong Country. We have Gex, of course, star of Gex Enter the Gecko and many other games. There's Mutant Speed Demons, a Michael Mentime video game. I've never heard of that game. And some other stuff.
I think the highlight here is the Sims-branded bucket hat, which is what I think you got free if you joined the army in the early 2000s.
Wow. Okay, so speaking of, here's the Laurie Anderson game, Puppet Motel. There's some info about Puppet Motel, and then right next to it is Peter Gabriel's Eve from 1996. This is the era of pop star and art pop people doing kind of vanity interactive CD-ROM projects. There's an interactive Bob Dylan's museum, Head Candy with music by Brian Eno. I didn't even know if I know about that one. There's one by The Residents, a few. I think there's a Prince one as well. But yeah, that's cool that they're showing it here. Anything to add?
That actually is really cool. I'm hoping to spot Laurie Anderson here on the floor tonight.
Yes, I want to ask Laurie Anderson about Lou Reed. So there's a Where in North Dakota is Carmen Sandiego? You know the story behind this, Ty?
No, I don't.
Okay, so the state of North Dakota commissioned Where in the World is Carmen Sandiego specifically for that state, and it was only, I think, played within, like, schools in North Dakota. So, yeah, they're showing that here.
That's pretty amazing, actually.
Yeah, and then there's an old PC game called Alter Ego, I've heard of this game. I can't remember in what context. So this is an interesting assortment of things, and it's so glad that it's shoved to the ass end of the conference and littered with popcorn.
This is actually a really cool selection of stuff, but the way that the Unreal booth is like eating it alive in a very like physical way is just symbolic of the way these kinds of things are treated.
We need to call Ross Scott from Ross's Game Dungeon in to save game history. Shout out to you if you get that reference, which none of you will.
Okay, so Ross, if you're listening, come on the pod.
He's not going to. Hello, Justin. I saw somebody that I know. And okay, so here we go. We have We Made again. And there's a sort of a 45-degree angle structure with a cloud on it. It says, build games faster on-prem, hybrid, in the cloud. And it's surrounded by an angelic bluish, purplish light. And then there's a guy giving in this Adobe booth, like a VR presentation.
So if anybody's ever accused Adobe of lacking substance in some of their marketing, they have bought and are now selling a product called Substance. So eat it, haters.
Adobe Substance 3D. They have some models of various things that I guess were made in it. Yes, okay, here's a Niantic booth that is very small, actually.
Sort of lost its luster in the past couple of years.
Yeah, I guess so. It's right next to this giant cloud gaming weird bizarre metal structure called Incredibuild.
Incredibuild.
I agree. Okay, well look at this payment wall. What is this? Okay, it looks like they're about to release these like chrome balloons from this like structure in the ceiling for this thing called payment wall.
Put it behind a wall in payment wall. I don't know.
And then there's this very strange geometric structure that looks like something out of my game Problematic. That is like two columns with like little squares in between them, and then there's this screen that looks like a smartphone, and there it looks like people are drawing from a raffle. So I imagine these chrome balloons are there to release if somebody wins the raffle, and they have like it taped off. A very strange and interesting display, I have to say.
It is pretty interesting that on the big screen they have behind here, you can see the Windows Vista window that the animation is running on. So,
yeah, there's a 20 March 2024 Terminal 3.mp4. Shout out to VLC.
Shout out to VLC holding the games industry together.
Holding us all together, really.
Next door appears to be the set from the TV show Drake and Josh, extracted and put as a booth with sort of a Nickelodeon-esque interior of a house exposed to the show floor here.
It's called Pokey. It is there's a rotating sign over a strange, colorful set. I don't even know how to describe that. It's right next to a booth called BH Haptics with the H capitalized. It's like a yellow and black theme. Not much to say about that one. The servers.com booth is quite strange over here. We got mazes, I guess, in red over this black background. We got some strange little structures like a black cube with red carpeting and then like purple booth, and then there's like this these little like game show container little rooms inside here.
It's good to see that the set designers from Star Trek Next Generation are still getting work.
Yeah, although I think they've fallen off a little bit. And let's look at the Unreal booth before we, which is over there to the right. Well, okay, so this Pokey thing is, okay, this is like a Legends of the Hidden Temple. Wait, so this is like a Memphis Nightmare.
Yeah, it's sort of a yogurt shop mixed with the Nickelodeon Figure It Out set.
This is, there's like orange beams and like guardrails, and there's a giant white sign pointing down saying Pokey. I've never seen anything like this at the Expo 4. That is quite bizarre.
We're now approaching a booth advertising the concept of Germany, and they seem to have lots of games here that Germany has created. So I don't speak German. Do you, Liz?
No, unfortunately, I do not. Okay, here's the Unreal and Epic Games booth. They have a giant llama made out of Legos. apparently. I'm not sure what that has to do with it. I assume they're doing some sort of Lego program or something, because we saw Lego people.
I actually know a guy who builds these kinds of things for displays, and yeah, they pay somebody to construct and then sort of spray enamel a giant Lego construct. Yeah, you know, that's brands converging. We got a lot of synergy happening tonight.
All kinds of synergy. Okay, so yeah, it looks like there's a... This booth, as you can imagine, is quite large. We got a purple and blue theme. It's kind of black with a purple backlighting, and there's this like white, this strip of blue light around the door frame. And inside this little structure is like a carpeted mini office with the ceiling. It's like, it's very claustrophobic, honestly. But this is quite a large structure here, as you might imagine. Showing off various parts of Epic Games and the Unreal Engine. And it's right next to this giant servers.com thing. Somebody
is, I wonder what they sell.
Somebody is being filmed and interviewed for TV, apparently. We have a film camera filming people play through this game, I guess.
The Unreal booth is really... the design of the booth is evoking the first few Unreal games, just kind of claustrophobic hallways and a lot of orthogonal angles.
We're bringing back the 90s, folks. Okay, so on the Unreal booth, there's a huge seating area, and there's, like, a balcony above that looks down. It's... Imagine if, like, a social club was designed in the most gamery aesthetic way possible.
I think the upstairs is, like, a VIP area if you're a metahuman. So the normal humans are down here, but if you qualify as metahuman, then you get to go upstairs.
So if you are a peach covered in Vaseline, you are able to get to the next level, because then you look like you could have come out of the Unreal Engine.
They check for PBR, they check for nanite. If you check all the boxes, you're metahuman.
Cool. Well, now that we're on the same page of that, this meta booth has quite a line around it.
Yeah, we're looking at a mural of a woman with a huge hand who is somehow have some sort of plastic thing on her face. I think we might get to try the plastic thing if we wait long enough.
Experience today's demos, it says. And yeah, this is also covered in popcorn, so clearly popcorn is raining havoc over this entire expo floor.
There it is. We found it. The Unreal booth. They're the source of the popcorn scourge.
Of course. Of course. The popcorn scourge on the rest of humanity has been created by Unreal and Epic Games. Quite unfortunate.
And rest assured, they may be unreal, but the popcorn is very real.
Somebody is inside this booth playing a game called Samba de Amigo on the VR headset.
They have a chamber to isolate the weirdos who use the VR so then whip you in the face.
Oh, we saw behind the veil. I saw behind in the room behind this structure that was built by Meta. It's very plain compared to the Unreal. The Unreal one has like a lot of colors, a lot of like lights, and it's big and unwieldy. This one's a little bit more simple and it's mostly white and light blue.
I'm seeing, watching over the shoulder, somebody who's building chess in Unity, and chess has not existed up to this point in history, but it looks like he's about to crack it.
Zuckerberg has invented chess for the first time. The future of hyperscale games. Say hello to the future of hyperscale. What is this? Do you have any idea what this is?
Yes, so they've been working for years to try to add a fifth A to quadruple A, and so hyperscale is the technology that's allowing us to add another A without the entire structure toppling. We might get 5A or even hex A in our lifetime.
Get ready, folks. I have no idea if that's actually true, by the way, so don't quote me on that. This has a very interesting color theme because it has a bright pink carpet, but most of the booth is black. It's a weird, weird color scheme. So we're on the other side of this Meta booth. As you can imagine, the largest booths are the Meta and Unreal and Epic Games booths, especially the Unreal booth is probably the craziest one that we've seen.
Yeah, so Germany seems to be in the process of annexing Portugal here. We'll see how that plays out. And we're kind of moving into the part of the show floor where names get more and more nonsensical, like they just came up with them this morning.
So we have Keyword Studios in this cube that cannot... It looks like it's made of cardboard that cannot be accessed. Let's see, it says an end-to-end platform supercharged by technology. It's a blue and white color theme. Okay, here's the other side of it. Find your future career in a network of 70-plus studios. Okay, now we have a... this is a quite small booth for Tencent. Pretty simple white, sort of whitish light blue and light green corporate theme.
I've worked for Tencent before, and they're obviously the largest games conglomerate in the world at this point. Looking forward to seeing more.
Oh, and we have Tencent AI Lab here, creating emerging game worlds.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing more Chinese games at the show in the future.
We have Skills with a Z.
Yeah, that's the one that seems like it was made up this morning.
Yeah, and it's these interesting like logos that are backlit. This sort of cult recruitment logos. There's a lounge area here that I'm not even sure. Oh, okay, Creator Lounge. It's attached to Unity, I guess. Those chairs look nice.
The Creator Lounge has a wizard in it, which I guess really is a sort of creator, maybe of life.
Yeah, I would say so. We're looking at the Godot booth. I call it Godot. This is the Godot booth. And apparently we have noticed that it is a lot of the same games as last year.
They have the best carpet of the show, though. It's really plush. It's almost a shag.
Yeah, it's a mostly white and light blue theme. It's pretty low-key, honestly. The Whales booth says, "This is creative. This is Whales. Creative Whales is the hidden force behind the incredible success that is seen in the Whales creative technology sector, fostering partnerships, supporting companies, and driving innovation to deliver work, world-class work on a global stage." Will Humphrey, creative director, Sugar Creative. Yes.
I'm a huge fan of Welsh games. Every single thing I've played this year is Welsh.
Well, I have actually played a few Welsh indie games before. But yeah, we are looking at the... Oh my God, this... The screens that they're showing, first of all, don't have any controllers attached to them, so I guess these are just showing off the games. You can't play them. But also, they're like bent, so it like bends in, so there's like a dinosaur spine kind of area in the middle with like a few chairs and stuff.
It evokes the idea that there's so much creativity in Wales that they are literally bursting at the seams.
Yeah, so you could sit inside of it and sort of burst out as if you're a chest burster in the Alien movies.
There are all these games emerging from what is the rotting skeleton of the old and into the new.
Yeah, it's a beautiful metaphor, honestly. Okay, here we are at the most important area of the show floor, the restrooms. So the restrooms are sort of an inlet into the wall, and there's these giant, weird, bent, curved structures that are holding the whole show up that look quite dramatic. But next to it, we have the restrooms, which are sort of fluorescently backlit, and there's a sort of weirdly green background in a few pictures of San Francisco.
Well, the murals of San Francisco are bifurcated by gender, right? So as we can see, women are Lombard Street and men are Ballpark, right?
Yeah, it's named after Carol Lombard and then Jimmy Ballpark.
Yeah, Jimmy Ballpark, who loves the hot dog. He's walking here, right?
I was thinking the football stadium isn't actually in the city anymore, but I think the baseball stadium, it still is. So disregard what I was about to say. So we were just discussing how it's hard to tell what, like, a lot of these do. It's a little bit, this is maybe a year for mystery technology. I mean, so there is an AI one in a very, very small booth, the GNUS.AI, but then there's also something here called PubNub. And it says it's a platform, I guess, real-time APIs for chat, matchmaking, and more. But yeah, a lot of mystery technologies. We got a motion capture, so not as much AI stuff as I would assume.
Yeah, you know, a lot of these are very much in the realm of, like, what does this do? I don't know. Who gave it money? A lot of people. And I don't know. I don't think I want to touch the PubNub. I don't want to touch the PubNub.
Yeah, that's understandable, to be honest. Okay, so there's the Vicon, this weird little booth. It's in, like, this metal cage that's held up by scaffolding.
Oh, this is mocap for sure.
Oh, okay. I guess scaffolding and mocap are kind of, you know, part of the same thing.
You said the phrase, now we have a retargeter for Shogun. So I hope that means something to you out there, folks.
It means everything to me, I know.
Next to Vicon mocap, we have Arm, and later down, I assume, we'll see Leg. But arms are what you need to do mocap, and so it makes sense that they're next to each other.
It's also very orange, the most orange booth. There's kind of a hanging above is a 90-degree angle bent sign that has Arm and white text over this sort of orange booth. geometric pattern, and then the booth is just mostly orange and white with this sort of faux wood, I don't even know what you call it, texture instead of carpeting.
Now, see, what I assume was this is the very famous British company that makes computer processors that are in everything, but actually it is not. It is something that I have no idea what it is, and is not a computer processors at all. So they're making a game called Steel Arms, apparently.
So next we have Trans Perfect Gaming, which is about trans games by trans people. No, in fact, it is not about that, which is very unfortunate. It is within a giant glass booth. So it's kind of like a metaphor for transitioning, is you get put in a giant glass booth and you talk to a guy in a ball cap about accessibility, art production, audio services, game development, localization, marketing, legal services, player support, community management, and LQA and FQA testing, also LGBTQA and FGBTQA testing. No, I just added that part.
I was excited briefly that LQA and FQA were the new acronym for our community, but we are not able to test exotic new forms of hormones here, unfortunately.
It's sad. We're not there yet as a community, unfortunately.
FMod, for when you built the whole game and you realize right at the end, oh yeah, it needs some audio in it.
Hey, don't shortchange audio. Audio people get mistreated and not paid well, and it's a problem. That's why I didn't keep trying to do music for games, to be perfectly honest. So Ty just took a picture of a bunch of guys sitting at a table in a mocap suit. We have a booth for Audio Kinetic. And I also saw something for WeMix, which was our crypto friend from the last couple years. I don't know actually what they're... I assume they're a sponsor, but I don't actually know what they're showing or if it's still crypto-related. But we do have a booth for TikTok, which I am quite surprised to see, and also one for Discord. The TikTok book does not look very large. It's part of the Tencent booth, I guess. But yeah, we're getting into the less distinguished, smaller booths here. There's one called Meshi. It has a logo that almost looks like a character from, like, super, like a little thing from, like, a little Metroid or something. And, some gaming chairs. Yeah, we're getting really into the far end of the show base now. The show base. Sorry, I'm looking at this thing called Couch Base. And yeah,
the consistent theme is that the name of whatever these companies are going to have absolutely nothing to do with what they do. Like, I bet $100 that Meshi has absolutely nothing to do with 3D meshes.
Possibly, yeah. Well, this booth has a GameCube in it. Oh, okay, GDC Arcade Play. Okay, that's pretty normal.
I want to try AIQ Synerquil hand tracking thing.
That sounds like the next hit indie game. So now Ty has come face to face with an old friend slash foe, the industry stage.
Yeah, so when my talk was originally accepted back in the year that GDC was canceled, it was at the industry stage. Well, what is the industry stage? Turns out it is a sealed box, the back corner of the far hall in a darkened crevice of GDC where they put all the, I don't know even what they do here, but a sad state that there's the stage unannounced in the far dark corners of the largest expo hall that nobody knows about.
Although, strikingly, quite a few people are sitting in the audience. Honestly, more people that were at a lot of GDC talks that I saw in the normal room. So maybe, I guess, people know about it.
What I'm confused by is what makes all the other stages not industry stages.
I really couldn't say, to be honest. I really don't know. That's actually an interesting point. Okay, so we have a GDC arcade. It's just like a free play of a bunch of different games. It's fine. I'm glad they have something like this so people who are bored have something to do. We also have a little memorial to Janelle Jacques, who just died this past year. Let's see. We'll just read through it for it. Multi-talented artist, level designer, adventure creator, and storyteller. In this exhibit, The Maid celebrates Janelle Jacques. Janelle was involved in the gaming industry since its inception in the 1970s. While originally an artist, her skills and imagination led her to creating some of the most popular and innovative levels of all time. So it has a list of her work. And yeah, it's next to, I guess, a few things that she worked on. But it's a nice little exhibit. It does look like a science fair presentation and how it's printed out, which is a little sad. It would be nice to be bigger, but it's cool that they did it regardless.
Not the greatest production value, but I do remember the Bratz games for GameCube. Those are actually pretty cool.
Nice.
You could tell we didn't think about the colleges at all.
There was some board that we were signing that had where a sign where you work or whatever on it, and the colleges, there was a bunch of colleges thrown at the bottom. Also, four guys are on the couch playing Halo, proving to us that the dream of the 2000s is still alive and well.
They're actually performance artists. This is a tableau of a dorm room in 2003.
They're dressed quite like people on a dorm would be, so now we have just an empty lounge here with more popcorn soiling the floors of the convention. There's a popcorn machine here and a Discord booth. This is a little more low-key on this other side of the, yeah.
We've got Discord, the software that everybody uses and really, really hoping isn't going to fuck us over within the next year.
Yeah, fingers crossed, but, you know, they'll probably fuck us over. Yeah, I'm currently feeling sad because my friend whose game was nominated for IGF didn't add my name to the VIP. It's such a first world problems issue. I feel stupid for even complaining about it, especially when I'm looking at this wonderful TikTok booth. But yeah, if I sound downbeat, that's part of the reason why. I'm not going to get to sit at the cool people tables. They're not going to want to talk to me, and they won't even know I exist. So, you know, what's the point if they don't know you exist? So that's a tip from GDC. People don't know you exist if you don't sit at the cool people tables. So, but sometimes not existing is better. So sometimes it's better to not exist. So that's a calculation we all have to make in our life.
Tip from Liz, choose when and when not to exist carefully.
Yeah, actually, that is a profound lesson that we can all learn. Web3 gaming sucks. We have aren't they selling like Web3? So there's a booth called Web3 Gaming Sucks, but I don't know if it's just a random publisher who bought out a booth like this, or they are actually Web3 and they're like trying to joke on themselves. I don't know. Here's the Code CWA booth. They always have an interesting logo. There's like it's red and white and like lots of little gears connecting up to each other.
I've been waiting for this booth. This is the booth where you can talk to a ChatGPT NPC with a monotone voice. They say it's the future. You can talk about, I don't know, dogs with the whatever shopkeeper in your game. It's so thrilling to talk to somebody in a game that's not written at all and has no point and just kind of rambles about whatever and doesn't really go anywhere. It's the future.
That's the future. So we have this weird triangular pyramid-esque structure just in three different structures that are sitting over this booth called Arbitrum. I don't actually know what Arbitrum is, and it doesn't say anywhere, so it's a blue, light blue in black theme.
Arbitrum, it looks like the second coming of Nexium.
Yeah, so watch out. Watch out for any mysterious branding. I just saw a sign that said "fuck toxicity," but it apparently is, and the "fuck" is censored. Obviously, you know, children might be here, but it apparently is advertising something called ToxMod by Modulate. So it's a little bit of a misnomer. Okay, and now we're here with some game institutions, including the NYU Game Center, which I teach at occasionally.
Yes, in the section with all of the countries, we have the country of New York with its capital, New York City.
New York, the best country in the world. Don't you ever forget it. And we have Ty's favorite university. Now, Ty, do you have anything to say about SCAD that can be said on a podcast?
They're going to get the $30,000 I owe them, but they're never going to get 1 cent more.
Okay, that's the censored version that you're getting. We have, so on the New York booth, I forgot to say, we have a developed in New York State sign, which is conspicuously reminds us of the Gameworkers Unite logo designed by Scott Benson. So maybe a little bit of a ripoff, if I'm putting it lightly.
It looks exactly like it, with a little bit of New York slapped in the bottom.
So, cool, thanks. I rescind everything I said about New York being the greatest country in the world.
Yes, at least in the bottom of the top 10.
Yeah, now that you plagiarized New York, you're out. You're dead to me, even though I still live there.
Philadelphia would never do this.
Well, I'm not moving to Philadelphia, sorry. Now we have the games from different countries. We got the Brazil games, the Swiss games. We saw Wales. This is India Pavilion. Yeah, about as big as the New York Games Programs booth, which is kind of funny. An entire country, like Brazil and India, are take up about the same amount of space. So, you know,
we have Flanders, state of the art. So the Belgian Games has been fully Flanderized.
Yeah, in Flanders Fields, we can find Belgian Games. So take a look out for that. Oh, Chile, too. I missed Chile. So now, in addition to the industry stage, we have the partner stage, which is also a self-contained little box in the middle of the expo floor. And again, about as many people here as I'd seen in some of the indie talks. So, but it's kind of, once again, buried in the back.
Pretty unclear what is supposed to be happening in the partner stage, but my partner's not here, so I'm not going in there.
Dune SpongeBob, how to create successful games adapting great IPs. That's what the panel is.
I'm looking over to the crossover SpongeBob Dune film.
Yeah, I think that's going to be great. Okay, so this is a weird... These chairs and tables are weird over here. For Wallonia.be, Export Investment. Yeah, I don't know. These tables are just strange to me. These, like, metal chairs with these, like, very tiny backs that are very high up. And this also very high up, like white square tables with this sort of metal stand. I don't know.
Let's be real. It's impossible to truly get into the mind of a Belgian.
Yeah, maybe that's what I'm missing. And now we are at All Control GDC in the IGF Pavilion, which gets a little more sad every year, looking every year. It's more crammed together, more in the back, even less frills in terms of the presentation. So, you know. That's what it is.
On the other hand, it seems like Alt Control is actually bigger this year.
Yeah. That's as much as I want to put on a podcast about my thoughts about that. Okay, now we have the Startup Lounge Bar.
We did it, folks. We're entering the Startup Lounge Bar, infiltrating the inner sanctum of Y Combinator, presented by MasterCard.
So this might seem like something large, but it is in fact a very tiny booth and a few different tables and chairs, and I don't even know why it's at this far end of the show floor or why it's right next to the IGF or another weird, giant, cute-looking orb that says Anything World on it that has like a cartoon drawing on it.
Yeah, in the Startup Lounge, there's literally five tables and one very sad-looking bartender.
I'd say there's seven tables, but still, it's quite small, much smaller than you'd think. I should mention, I have seen more AI things after saying that we didn't see that many, but they're all very small, it seems. I don't know, I haven't seen any giant, like I did with the crypto stuff. This Anything World booth is really strange. I don't even know what it is, but it looks like it was designed by, like, the logo and stuff looks like it was designed by, like, Mushba or somebody like that. It's kind of in that art style. Sort of like item label-esque adjacent. So, yeah, if you know what that is, you know. Behind the IGF, we have the GDC sales suite, which is another bizarre cube. This time looks like more like office meeting adjacent, and there's this weird spreadsheet of meeting times on the far end.
Only the most elite of the most elite get to enter the GDC sales suite.
Also very strange that it's right next to the IGF. But yeah, things gotta be where they gotta be. There's like windows all around this cube, so you can look into these people doing sales and a lot of maps of the floor and schedules and spreadsheets. So, you know, just your usual
kind of stuff.
Our both of our feet are hurting, so we're going to sit down. But the thing I wanted to say is, like, the first time I went to GDC and I saw the IGF booth, it was like one of those things where I was like, you know, this is my space. These are my people. And it was buried in the midst of all the sponsorship and everything like that. But there was always a sense that it was going to be bigger and sort of take over the industry and all this kind of stuff. And in a way, like, of course, indie stuff has become absorbed to the industry, but it's just, in a way, it's also been kind of sad because it's become more and more like just part of the industry machine. And just seeing the IGF booth being, if anything, a little shabbier than they have been in the past, just sitting there, it's a little bit of a bummer. It just makes me think that, like, some of that stuff has died out, and I don't know, it's not a great feeling, to be honest, but that's what I have to say about that. Now I'm looking at this freezer of It's, which if you've ever been to the Bay Area, is like a Bay Area ice cream sandwich with oatmeal cookies. It's pretty good. Anyway, that's all I'll have to say about that. I'm pretty sure that we're done walking the expo floor, so I'm going to sign off. It is 4:08 on Wednesday. My throat is starting to hurt, so I hope you all enjoyed that. We might cut it down or whatever, but yeah, thank you for listening.
So Frank, you've been on the show floor the whole time?
Oh yeah, pretty much. Other than the time that I tried to go to what's it called, Fresh Roll? That's a Vietnamese place?
Oh yeah. What is it called? I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I ordered something for a 20-minute pickup, and it took 45 minutes. that's the time that I left the show floor.
But, yeah.
And then, as you know, I was going to say I left the show floor to pee, but I guess I peed on the show floor.
All over it.
All over the show floor. Just right on it.
So you're here in your booth, and...
Well, hang on. Let me correct you.
We can,
this is not our booth. The booth would imply that we paid for it.
Well, would it? I mean, it's a booth with your name on it. I know you didn't pay. You were kind of paid for it.
Yeah. So yeah, I've been at the Game History Gallery. I'm hoping this is the first of many years of the Game History Gallery being a feature at GDC. So the idea was I wanted there to be an interactive history exhibit that inspires the younger developers here by looking at interesting ideas from the past. Like the initial pitch that I had was I wanted to do the IGF pavilion, except the games are old, which I think I kind of did. I mean, what do you think?
I think so. They're all neat. They're all interactive, which is important. It's not just something behind glass. And
then also there's stuff behind glass.
And also there's stuff behind glass. And as we saw, like yesterday, Bion from Q Games came and played Simtunes for more than a half hour.
Yeah.
And just started going nuts with it. So it's working.
Yeah, that part's working. There was also a younger woman who played Alter Ego for at least an hour, which I thought was really cool. Yeah. That is not like a kiosk game, but we did our best. And she got into it and she really understood it and was asking me a lot of questions about its author and stuff, which is really cool.
So you have Wabbit, you have Alter Ego, you have Where in North Dakota's Carmen San Diego, you have
Puppet Motel by Laurie Anderson.
Puppet Motel and Simtunes.
Yeah. There's a theme here.
Yeah. Talk about it.
Yeah. So the theme here is that all of these games were creatively, well, first of all, were creatively led by someone you could point to and say, that's their game. But second of all of those individuals are people from outside of the traditional game dev environment at the time. So for example, Alter Ego was a forensic psychologist in New York, you know. Simtunes Toshio Iwai is more of an experimental artist type, not like a video game developer. Let's wave hi to Sean Alexander. Hi, Sean Alexander.
Hi, Sean Alexander. He realized that we were recording and backed off slightly.
Yeah, he's got luggage. He's probably leaving.
Yeah. Who has come by that has been interesting and notable?
Oh, yeah. Like, a part of this exhibit, too, just to preface that part, is that there's this display case in the center of stuff from our archives that's basically like an exhibit of like stuff that we collect, like types of things that we collect, by Sean Alexander.
He went. We waited too long.
Yeah. So we just put in things like old photographs and design documents and like printouts of source code and stuff. And the idea is I want older developers especially to look at the stuff and go, oh, you want that? You know, that's the kind of stuff you look for? Yeah, I have that. I have boxes of that stuff. And so we have had quite a few people, not quite a few, I don't know, like five.
it's more than zero.
It's good leads, right? Come by from that. And also from the thing I did after IGF as well. But I think the funniest one, I don't remember if I told you this, in the glass case for Where in North Dakota is Carmen Sandiego, we have, you do know this, okay.
Yeah.
We have this brochure that's like a brooder bun for education. Because, you know, a lot of the brooder bun games like Carmen Sandiego were used in schools and they started doing that officially. They went, oh, that's a market, let's do that. And there's like this staged photo on the cover of like teachers pointing at things. And this guy came up and he's like, that's me. That's me on the cover.
That's so good.
Yeah. I'm literally behind glass in your museum. That's terrifying. And yeah, it turned out he worked for Bruderbund on all kinds of stuff, mostly the educational part of it. And he seems like a good contact because we were talking. He's like, yeah, then I went to Sega in 91. I was there for like 10 years and I kept all my ROMs. It's like,
hooray.
And I live in Marin. For those listening, Marin is very close to where we are right now and where we live. So yeah, stuff like that ended up happening. Had some good visits from other guys. Like, you were just looking at a stack of games from someone who's been programming for a long time. It's so cool. Like, he did Sega VR games.
The early ones?
Well, okay. You probably know that we virtualized the Sega VR. We had
right.
And we did that because someone had put the source code to a Sega VR game called, I think, Nuclear Rush onto GitHub. And that code gave us just enough clues about how the thing worked for Rich Whitehouse, our volunteer engineer, to make it work. And I was talking to him, and this guy who brought over this games, because he heard my IGF thing, and he was like, yeah, you know, I put a lot of my code online. I did the Sega VR game. And I was like, oh, like, he's like, oh, you're those guys. He didn't realize we were the same people who, like, worked with his code to virtualize it. And I mean, we were talking more, and he's like, yeah, I've got more backups of source. It's just on, like, old media that I don't know how to read anymore. And, like, we do.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of good leads of stuff like that. Roger Hector from Atari from, like, the 70s dropped by.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Like, he just saw the sign, and he's like, I'm history.
Yeah, it's true. He is that. Yesterday, I just heard people walk, and people are certainly interested in history in general. I heard some guy walking around telling a story to some people where he met this guy, and he's like, I wrote the first video game called Tennis for Two, which you may know as Pong. And I don't know. I just overheard this on the street, and there's some inaccuracies in this.
Yeah.
In this statement, he may have misremembered some things, but it was just interesting to hear somebody who was like totally a biz bro.
Yeah.
Walking around talking about
people he invented. Video
no, no, no. He met a guy who said this, but anyway, talking about being interested in video game history. It's nice to see
the ghost of Willie Higginbottom.
That's right.
Wow. That's incredible.
It's possible that the guy that he was talking to programmed like one of those set-top boxes or something.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of those guys are still alive, right? And there was like some cool like common chips that were used in all kinds of maybe I don't know.
Yeah.
But you said tech bro, so I don't trust him.
Indeed. So then you also gave your little speech at the IGF. You want to talk about that and what resulted?
Yeah, sure. So I was invited to go on stage and say whatever I wanted about game preservation. Like, it's actually really cool. A lot of the show organizers very specifically wanted more of a game preservation presence this year. That's my wife, Amanda. She's at the booth now.
There she is. She was carrying big tubs she was carrying.
Oh, right, because that's what we need for packing. So, yeah, I was invited to say whatever I wanted about game preservation on stage, and what I chose to do was, within 2 minutes, just kind of tell people that their lives are important, their work matters, and that if they don't save their work, I don't just mean like retail product, right? Like save their actual raw work and their, like the things that help a historian know who they were, they might be forgotten, their stories might be lost. And so the crux of what I said was, I need you to go home and start a box, because my job is to go to people's houses and dig out their boxes and find the things that are in there and preserve them. And I'm worried that no one's making boxes anymore. You know, like, I didn't get into all this, but, you know, these boxes of things that exist, like a lot of those things in those glass cases, it's from literally dead people there, right? Like whose family donated their stuff. We wouldn't know anything about them if they didn't take that stuff home. The only reason they took that stuff home is because they left their job and just packed what was in their desk, right? Like, it wasn't even an intentional archival thing. I think it has to be now, because we don't work in offices where we clutter things on our desks and then put them in boxes when we leave. And like, that worries me. And I don't think I was direct enough in retrospect, but what I was trying to say was, like, look, on Monday when you're back to work, I need you to steal all your stuff from work, bring it home, and reclaim it before they lay you off and take you out of the credits.
Yeah, it would. I was waiting for you to say steal from your job.
Yeah.
But it's okay that you did. Yeah, I understand. Being up on the big stage, you probably don't really want to say steal from your job. It just feels a little...
I don't know. Like, well, I mean, if I knew what the vibe would have been, I might have tuned it differently.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just kind of writing this not knowing what the other presenters are going to be like, what mood the crowd's going to be in, right? And
yeah,
like, my take on it was, did you go to the DICE Awards?
Yes, I did.
So I felt like the DICE Awards this year was like, we're angry, you don't know what to do with that. Like, we're all upset. And I felt like the vibe, you know, a month later at GDC was like, let's start trying to figure out how to be productive with the situation. But also, we're all pissed off and upset still. So, yeah, I might have been a little bit more direct if I'd kind of known what the vibe would have been. But I don't know.
We also spent some time talking to Mark Cerny about what he thinks about all of this. And he was talking about how he wants to find a way to get more personal stories and or like who was the person that made these things. It was a very difficult and interesting problem that he was talking about, I feel.
It is. I mean, he was like, a lot of what he was trying to convey. And then one of those situations where you have to take what the person's saying and like convert it into something practical, you know? What he was saying was that he's frustrated that video game history is only celebratory and doesn't kind of get into like the real struggles and like who the people really were and what they were doing. And I don't know. I felt like you and I had kind of a circular conversation with them, right? Where it was just like, okay, we get what you're saying. We can't get that out of people, right? Like, a human doesn't start spilling all of that unless they trust the person talking to them. And you are talking about people who trust you. Fill in the blank marks, Annie.
Yeah, so we're going to try to get him to do things. But it was very interesting to hear him talk about how he feels like there's too much of a focus on, like, firsts or celebratory things or product rather than the lived experience of being a game developer. But as we just discussed, it is very difficult to get that without knowing the person quite well. So yeah, hopefully we can, but that it is an interesting idea, and we could get hold of people like Mark or others who can get access to that, and it could be an interesting something.
Yeah. Well, it's also like, I'm really glad I finally started this conversation with Mark about what do you care about when it comes to historical preservation? Because you are history. You made Marvel Madness.
Yeah.
And some other stuff.
Yeah. Sonic 2.
Yeah, whatever. He left before it shipped.
It's true.
But his name was in the credits. Weird. Maybe we should try that.
Yeah.
But where was I going with that? Yeah, like I'm really encouraged that like I think he wants to have a follow-up conversation about this and like figure out how we, you know, actually start affecting change here. But even if not, he told me he would talk to me about Sega Technical Institute, so I'm good.
Yeah, and that, ladies and gentlemen, is all we need. So I think that's going to be
it. It's an interesting studio, man.
I agree.
And like, you know, like we know on a high level what it was, but we don't have the Cerny level of insight into Sega Technical Institute.
No, absolutely. There, I did a post on Insert Credit that then got stolen by a bunch of websites because Mark Cerny shared a photo on Facebook. This was like 15 years ago, of Michael Jackson looking over his shoulder at this was Sega Japan,
right?
But and I was like, can I talk to you about this and like what was going on? He's like, yeah, he brought his monkey, but he left it in the limo, and Like, it's just like this bizarre life that Mark Cerny has led.
Well, and also, that studio that he was at was really interesting because they were making the weird little modem games.
Right.
You know, like Yasuhara, did he do Pyramid Magic? He probably did. Like, I don't know if you know Pyramid Magic,
yeah.
But it's like an interesting little like platform puzzle-y thing. But yeah, he went from like making the weird little games for the Master System and the Mega Drive to like starting this weird experimental, like, you know, cross-continent
right.
discipline sharing studio
yeah.
that I don't think worked ultimately. Like, it kind of seemed like after Sonic 2 is like, well, let's just have Japan over here in this side of the office and the US over here making Comic Zone or whatever.
Yeah, I do think that was the ultimate result. But it is that's a good sort of example of like, if it weren't me yeah. and Mark Cerny already knew me, I wouldn't have been able to ask him more. I wouldn't have, first of all, I wouldn't have been on his Facebook.
Right.
I wouldn't have been able to ask him these questions.
Yep.
And he wouldn't have given me the answers.
Yeah.
And then knowing him, the people that he knows, we need him then to get that. There's like a cascade effect of yeah. knowing people
yeah.
that we need to make happen.
Yeah. But, you know, he is someone who's, he's been on the advisory board at GDC like since before we even attended GDC.
Yeah.
Right. So like, he's someone who is engaged with like making connections with people and bettering things. So like, hopefully he wants to extend into this stuff too.
Yeah. Cool. Well, we did it. I think that's what you get.
Oh, that
folks.
Was good. Come
it
on.
Was good. No. Yeah. Sorry. I didn't mean to diminish it. I'm simply saying we're finished. This is the end of the conversation.
Understood.
Good. Okay. Goodbye to you, dear friend.
Okay, I'm here with Evan Ballster after GDC. Evan, can you please explain what the fuck the Deja Vu game is?
I accidentally let this particular genie out of the bottle.
You sure did.
At the hostel last night. With Liz and another unfortunate victim who will remain anonymous. Anyway, around high school, I don't know. Like, I'm not an entirely neurotypical person. In fact, I'm probably a very non-neurotypical person. And we all experience deja vu from time to time. It's explained as, like, a momentary malfunction of the human memory apparatus where, as we're recording a memory into our brain, we don't properly experience it as the present, but as the memory that we're currently writing. So it's like we're remembering the thing that presently happens. And yesterday...
It was actually day and a half ago, I think.
Day and a half ago. So there's a game that I've been playing since about high school age to experiment with deja vu. And it's very weird and very cursed and very upsetting in its implications. But I've kind of been doing it so long, you know, more than a decade, that I stopped kind of thinking it was remarkable, and I've never really told anyone about it. But the other day at GDC, I played this game because I got deja vu about my very specific plans to come over here to Tyreek Plummer's house, and have a fine time, then board the train back home. And in that fit of deja vu, I asked myself, do I remember calling out a number? And I very clearly remembered 6. So I spoke aloud, just out of the blue, 7. I remarked that I was having deja vu, and then I said 7. And Liz made a life-ruining mistake and asked me, Evan, why did you say 7? I said, oh, geez. Well, it's a bit of a funny story. So, since high school, the game I've played, perhaps, I don't remember my specific motivations for inventing this. Perhaps it was to test if my deja vu was actually a result of me having an extremely similar experience in the past. I invented a game where, upon experiencing deja vu, if you do not remember calling out a number or loudly thinking a number, you call out 1, or if that would be socially inappropriate, as it was a day and a half ago, you simply think it very intently. So, say I'm in a taxi cab watching rain roll down the window, and a red neon sign scrolls by, and I have a strange feeling that this has happened before, but I don't remember calling out any kind of number. I would call out 1. If, however, I remember calling out the number 1, I would instead increment it and call out 2. If I remember calling out 2, I would call out 3. The thing about the deja vu game that I've been privately playing throughout my adult life without telling anyone is that I've gotten a lot of 4s, 3s and 4s throughout most of my adult life. And recently I've had a period where I haven't experienced a lot of deja vu. And at some point in that period, I ceased to be Evan 4 and became Evan 7. I've never called out such a high number as 7, and I'm disturbed by its implications. It is certainly the case that I have never before planned to take the train to Tyreek Plummer's house. It is certainly the case that I have never done that and called out the number 6. Our friend, who will remain unnamed, posed to me the question again and again through the night, what does the number mean? And the simple answer is, I don't fucking know. And it's a little worrying, but over the years, as I've continued to play this game, for whatever fucking reason, I've just learned not to think too hard about it. So, and upon describing this to Liz and our friend who will remain unnamed, I realized that in having done so, I had injured them. I had injured them psychically and perhaps infected them with a sort of hostile mind virus, something that might expose, most likely, a little crack in the mechanism of human memory, if not the fabric of reality itself.
So I just want to sidebar here. And then when Evan said 7, I was like, so you remembered saying 6. And Evan was said, yes, but I didn't say 6. That was actually my deja vu remembering something that didn't happen when I said 6. So the 6 didn't happen.
Yes.
So that is what I couldn't figure out. Like, why 6 and not another number?
Yeah, why 6 and not another number? The simple answer is that, you know, when you're having deja vu, you're remembering the present. You're experiencing a reverie for the things that are being recorded into your brain right now. But when I ask my memory, what number did I call out? I don't know. It feels like I'm looking a moment into the future and I can clearly hear myself calling 6. And so I call out 7 because that is the rules of the game. Sometimes I wonder about Evan number 6, or in the past it would have been Evan number 3. How's he doing? What's going on in Evan number 3's world? Is it world number 3? And what the fuck is going on with Evan number 1 and Evan number 0? Why have I never been Evan number 1 or Evan number 0? Am I less special than those?
I could not say. Could not say.
So anyway, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry. I'm so fucking sorry because I spent that evening sincerely considering whether it would be harmful to disclose this information in recorded format, whether I would in fact be sort of creating an informational pathogen, the likes of which is documented in internet creepypastas, usually as a fictional topic. If you play a deja vu game, it is my sincere recommendation that you treat it as a little joke of the universe and try not to think too hard about the implications of your number or the incidents in which it shifts around. This is Evan Balster apologizing profusely and signing off. Good night.
Thank you, Evan. I just want to say, when Evan said the word 7... they said it very quietly, which is why I never should have asked. Because when someone says something very quietly, you know that you're just unlocking something that you don't want to know. And that was my fault, and I apologize. I need to know. I need to figure out the mystery. I need to solve it. And sometimes the mysteries just can't be solved. So do we have any other comments? Tyreek, do you have any thoughts about this before we sign off?
I enjoy not comprehending the incomprehensibility of the universe. So actually, I think I'm going to begin partaking in this deja vu game to see to what degree exactly my mind unravels in the future. And yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Okay, well, neither of us can be responsible for what happens. Izzy, do you have any thoughts about this?
Well, I got deja vu. I just text my best friend, hey, I've got deja vu. And then she sends back a heart react, and that's all we do when I have deja vu. So
that sounds a lot more nice and simple and not a mind virus. So I'm sorry. This was my idea to bring it up, to bring it out into the open. I'm sorry. Okay, this is Lynn.
I'm so fucking sorry.
I'm sorry, everyone. Okay, goodbye.
Greetings, Insert Credit audience. This is Liz Ryerson. So I did make a few recordings at this year's GDC, and one of them that I sent to Esper, the show's producer, as you might know, was from last year's GDC that I didn't end up sending out that I thought was pretty funny. So I'm just, you know, contextualizing that. That was on the Tuesday, 2 days before I, you know, tested positive for COVID that year. So
I'm here with Robert Yang, the game designer Robert Yang, on Tuesday afternoon. And Robert has a dilemma right now that he wants to explain.
Okay, so imagine there's like a small puddle of spit like on the table or something, but also there's like a hairball. The dilemma is, would you rather touch the puddle of spit or would you rather touch the hairball? Now, everyone has a consensus that you should touch the hairball. So I'm trying to make the hairball option more gross so that there's a threshold where people would prefer to touch the spit. So I'm just trying to figure out, like, how do you balance this dilemma?
So what are the game design techniques that you think would work in this situation?
NFTs. Like, if you touch the puddle spit, you have to, like, buy an NFT now.
That sounds pretty good.
Wait, no. That balances it. Okay, if you touch the hair, you have to buy an NFT or something. Mostly just penalties. That's all I can think of.
Any other penalties?
If you touch the hair, I punch you.
Okay, so we're bringing back the abuse genre of games. We're bringing back Tekken Torture Tournament. Anything else to add? Do either of you have anything to add?
To make the hairball more gross, you can pull the vomit card. Hairball covered in vomit. Or is that just adding another substance? Does that make it too,
like a cat hairball?
I feel like that's even less gross.
A fresh hairball. Not a dry.
Is human hairball grosser than cat hairball for everyone? Is that?
I'd say about equally as gross.
Okay.
Okay, so about this, I think the fundamental error in people's reasoning is they think the hairball has come from the top of a human being, but there are many other creatures and many other anatomical regions that can easily produce hairballs, potentially more concerning than a puddle of spit.
Oh, like pubic hair, a pubic hairball.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. Or, you know, perhaps regions, you know, even more concerning regions of origin for a hairball. You know,
be more specific.
Maybe it's ambiguous. You know, maybe you don't know what part of the body.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, I like that.
The original premise assumed that it was ambiguous, though. Like, there was never there's no plaque that says, like, hairball of X, Y, or Z.
Do you think that would add something to the interactive experience if there was a plaque?
If there was a plaque, I feel like I'd be more compelled to interact with something, though. Because then I'd be like, wow, I touched a hairball that had a plaque next to it.
It adds a degree of respectability and, like, institutional, you know, approval.
Yeah, so maybe we just need to give the spit a plaque. And then it's like the spit of a God.
Calvin Coolidge. This is Calvin Coolidge's spit.
If it was between like ambiguous hairball and Calvin Coolidge's spit, I would touch the Calvin Coolidge's spit because that's a great story to tell at a bar.
It's 100 years plus old. Well, when did he spit?
Wait,
So this is a fundamental games problem, because now you've locked yourself into a bunch of narrative design to explain why the hair is more gross than the spit, when the answer was already obvious on which one was worse. Why do they have to be balanced, I think?
Okay, our studio is falling apart from disagreement and disunion. Do we have anything else to add about... So you were hearing from Emily Kuntz earlier, and this is Laura.
Yeah. I think you'd be unbalanced. I think it's okay if one is grosser than the other. I think.
No. A game is a set of interesting choices, and it's more interesting if you don't know whether to touch the spit or the hair.
Well, okay, but that's the thing. It's possible for the spit versus hair debate to be settled. So what we need is seasonal game design, where the hair versus spit question is revitalized every few months with a new major update that changes the meta of touch spit or touch hair.
It could be designed like that level in Banjo-Kazooie, TikTok clock or whatever, that has the different seasons.
Oh.
My reference points are all very 90s,
I was
so...
thinking like Fortnite seasons, like this is Goku's spit.
Yeah, I've never heard of that game,
so...
Goku
isn't real.
I like the idea of being like, did you get the new hair spit DLC? It's a real great one. All the kids are talking about it on TikTok.
I think we're working in a good direction here. I think there's a schism, but I think we're gonna make some rounds here. So, any other thoughts before I log off here?
Did you choose Pokemon Hair or Pokemon Spit this time around?
That would be an interesting thing that could divide the Pokemon fandom in interesting ways. Okay, I think this is an interesting dilemma. It's one that we can think about, you know, for a long time to come, and much to consider.
One question that consistently comes up in discussions around GDC is it worth going to GDC, and or should I go to GDC? Now, obviously, your utility of an event like GDC is going to completely depend upon your situation, i.e. how much money you have to go out there. Are you looking to promote a game or something? Are you looking to meet other developers? Or are you, you know, is your situation something else? So I think by far the biggest benefit of going to GDC is it's just the one big tent event, maybe one of a few, where a lot of different types of people go from different kinds of situations, backgrounds, etc. And I think that we are in a landscape where increasingly people are kind of in their own bubbles in a lot of ways. And I think partly this is a result of the pandemic. You know, people are more cagey about IRL spaces. People are more cagey about like big tent spaces in general. And I think that there is a lot of good reason for that, especially if you're doing something that is more, I don't know, off the beaten path, or at least not like under the same umbrella as traditional industry structures or indie structures, I guess. But I still think that there's a benefit to go to GDC, partly because you meet and are exposed to things that you would not be exposed to otherwise. I do want to say one thing here, though, that I am not a person with lots of money. I've been lucky to go to GDC. I used to live in the area. I have a friend I can stay with. But the point is that, like, I have made it work not consistently making much money doing this. And I've also juried for things like the Nuovo Award, which are for games that are often deliberately non-commercial or aren't going to make a lot of money. So there is certainly space for things that are more far out and strange. We've had a lot of games like that. And not just for the benefit of the people who are at GDC, who, you know, need to be reminded that the industry doesn't work exactly the way that they think it is, that there's a bigger amount of people doing a greater amount of stuff, but also for the benefit of the people who are maybe outsiders, who have never engaged with those kind of structures, and who can see like, hey, maybe this person who I see is not having anything in common with me at all actually has more in common with me than I think. And, you know, I had that realization with a few people that I met who were older game industry people from, you know, the 90s or whatever. And that was a big deal for me. So, and honestly, that's probably what sustains me in the space, if anything. So, you know, that's a big deal. And that can only happen at a place like GDC. And I think in a world where people have become so disconnected and in their own bubbles, I think that's especially useful. That's the reason why I do the experimental game workshop. I hosted it this past year, and I'm involved with curating it along with a bunch of other people. And, you know, we try to bring people from a variety of different contexts in to be under one roof. And I think there's a lot of use for that because things have become so sort of categorized by genre, by sensibility and whatever. And I think while that has allowed a lot of things to become more viable commercially, I think in the long run, that might end up being a narrowing and narrowing of audiences. So I think there's just for a long-term survival, I think going to an event like GDC is useful. So yeah, I guess I would push back against the idea that it's not useful, but you know, we can still laugh at all the goofy corporate stuff in an event like that. I understand, you know, the effort that it takes to put on events like this and all that kind of stuff, but it is pretty fucking weird and gaudy whenever you go to an event. You see these giant corporate banners everywhere. It's, you know, you kind of have to know what you're getting into. And, you know, maybe that's part of the fun in a strange way. But yeah, so that's what I would say about that. The other thing is, yes, you have not escaped me plugging myself here. So I just wrote a long post in heavy quotations about sort of the culture of the internet, Let's Plays, YouTube, old forum culture. It's called Let's Play Life. And it's on my blog. I might turn it into a book because it basically is book length. But yeah, please read that. And also, I'm working on music lately. I'm working on an album called Saint Elizabeth. You can find more info about it if you follow my Bandcamp page. It's Ella Gureau at ellaguro.bandcamp.com. If you follow it, I'll post updates on there. So anyway, that's enough of the plugs. Thank you for listening. Bye forever.
Insert Credit Guy Den is a production of Insert Credit. This episode featured Liz Ryerson, Ty Underwood, Brandon Sheffield, Frank Cifaldi, Evan Bolster, Tyreek Plummer, Robert Yang, and Emily Kuntz. Edited by me, Esper Quinn, with original music by Kurt Feldman. Thanks for listening.